Good afternoon, friends. The Baha'i community of Springfield welcomes you all to another one of our public meetings. The Baha'is of Springfield hold a public meeting whenever we have a special event or an outstanding speaker to come to the city of Springfield. Otherwise, their teaching efforts are confined to firesides that are held in the various homes of the Baha'is here in Springfield. The day before introducing the speaker, who is Ms. Thelma Gorham, I would like to give you a little preliminary sketch. While we're waiting for more of the people to get here. One of the things that the world needs and is coming to recognize that it needs more and more is that it needs a new spiritual leadership. That even though mankind has made tremendous amounts of progress in various fields of medicine and art, architecture, and in the various, yet the spirituality of mankind has lagged. And it has not met the needs of the people of the world. And the society in various aspects, in practically all of its aspects, is breaking down. That is society and its morals, and its institutions, in its relations of governments to governments and peoples to peoples and religions to religions, has broken down. Juvenile delinquency has arisen and has run rampant. On every side, we see signs of the lack of spirituality of mankind. This is not just a dream that I dreamt last night when I think these things. These are real problems. And I am not the only one that is expressing them. In reading the morning paper here in Springfield, there is a very nice article on this very subject that is in the Sunday News Leader on page 5A. That's today. There is a very nice article written by Mr. Fred Pullidge. And it was entitled, World's Need, Faith and Doubt. I think that this would be very fitting at this particular time to read this article of a man that is not a Baha'i, but a man that is voicing the same type of opinion that the Baha'is are crying to the world today. And I've consulted the speaker today, and she has permitted me to go ahead and read this article for you. Stamford, Connecticut. What does the world need most? Spiritual leadership, says playwright Elmer Reitz. And he says that he is not talking about organized churches. Reitz sees as the world's most terrifying problem the fact that man can now press a button and destroy himself. With spiritual leadership, he says, the problem may be solved. We need a return to nobility of behavior, decency of behavior, recognition of the potentials of man as a feeling and loving creature, he said. If that could be achieved, the desire to press the button would be eliminated. Elmer Reitz is the 66-year-old author of many plays that reflected the changing face of America. He shocked playgoers in 1923 with The Adding Machine, a satire on industrialism. His street scene, a realistic picture of the people behind the brownstone fronts, won him Pulitzer Prize in 1929. We the People, produced in 1933, shows how Reitz viewed the Depression. A year later, he produced Judgment Day, which reflected Hitler's rise to power. And the conflict between the Soviet and American ideals is shown in Between Two Worlds, produced in the same year. His most recent play on Broadway was last year's Cue for Passion, a modern treatment of the Hamlet theme. Rice discovered in 1956 from actress Betty Field, now lives alone. Rice divorced in 1956 from actress Betty Field, now lives alone in a house behind tall fir trees on a 15-acre tract here. He says he is mulling over a few ideas about writing, and he will soon publish a book on the stage. He was asked about the world's problems in an interview. The most important problem, of course, is the survival of the human race, he says. If we don't solve that problem, the other problems are insignificant. What then has brought about this problem of survival? This problem of pressing the wrong button? The human race has gone way off on industrialism. Our values are so much more material now. We criticize totalitarianism in Russia, but we too are guilty of the totalitarianism of success and getting along with big business. Everywhere we go, everything we see tells us to buy, 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 pile up merchandise, keep up with or surpass your neighbor. Rice is disappointed by the failure of the traditional leaders of public opinion to combat the totalitarianism of success. Organized churches do not meet the challenge, he says, neither do modern writers. Their emphasis is on despair. We need sharp criticism of our society, the criticism that is based on faith in the potentialities and creativeness of humanity. Criticism that arises from a desire for betterment. Colleges should be centers of searching skepticism and nonconformity, but they aren't anymore. College men seem to be chiefly interested in economic security. Students are afraid to join liberal groups now. I heard the story of a representative of a large industry who visited the college to talk with the top few students about future jobs. When he finished his talk, he asked for questions. 9 out of 10 students raised their hands and asked the same question. What about the retirement plan? There is too much damn conformity. We need more rebels. Iconoclasts, crackpots, and village atheists. They exist now, here and there, but they're entirely not encouraged. We need more faith and more doubt, faith in the potentialities of man, and skeptical examination of all of our institutions to discover wherein they fall short of ideals. In its mad rush towards conformity, industrialism, and getting along, says Rice, man has neglected his spiritual health. I believe the human race will never progress just on the basis of its material goods. There needs to be more emphasis on spiritual values. This is the greatest need in the world today, spiritual leadership. It is now almost non-existent everywhere in the world. Rice says spiritual leadership can come in two forms. A great leader like Gandhi, he says, can be a source of universal inspiration. He sees no such leader at the present time. Or it can come from individual behavior. The tone of society is made up of the individual lives that compose it. When the dominant tone of society is materialism, cupidity, destructive competition, it merely means it is the tone of the individual lives that compose it. How shall these lives be elevated? More faith and doubt, says Rice. Friends, this is just one of thousands upon thousands of intellectuals voicing what they see reflected in the faces of present-day society. Lack of spirituality. Lack of spiritual leadership. We Baha'is, who are in 255 countries, islands, and possessions of the world, believe that we can produce the most extraordinary figure of the 19th and 20th century in Baha'u'llah that offers the world a leadership. I think that nobody could probably better tell the story today of Baha'u'llah than probably our speaker, Ms. Velma Gorham. I would like to introduce you today, Ms. Velma Gorham of Oklahoma City. She is a graduate of the University of Minnesota with an AB and MA degree, majors in journalism and sociology. She has done graduate study at the University of Oklahoma Central College at Edmond, Oklahoma, and Stanford University. She was one of 18 winners of Media of Mass Communications Fellowship awarded for 1959 and 60 by the Fund for Adult Education, which is a Ford Foundation subsidiary. She will be on leave from her position as language and arts teacher at Moon Junior High School, Oklahoma City, to study for 1 year in the Communications Research Center at Stanford University at Palo Alto, California. She formerly taught at Hampton Institute, Hampton, Virginia, and Lincoln University, Jefferson City, Missouri. She worked on the Kansas City Call, the Los Angeles Sentinel, and she has written for the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender. She has served as secretary of the local spiritual assembly of the Baha'is of Oklahoma City. She is a member of the Baha'i Summer School Committee, which convenes in Dallas, Texas, for the past 5 years. She has had charge of publicity for the Oklahoma City Baha'i community. Currently, she is at work on a brochure to be used in teaching the faith to Negroes in the southern states. The work which she will do at Stanford next year will be taken for graduate credit. Official Army newspaper at Fort Huachuca, Arizona. She edited the Apache Sentinel, weekly newspaper and monthly special service bulletin. She was the first Negro woman to be elected a member of the Theta Sigma Phi, National Honorary Fraternity for Women in Journalism. Original member was in New Chapter, University of Minnesota. And I now give you Ms. Velma Gorham.
Dr. Jensen, members of the Baha'i community of Springfield and friends of Springfield. It's really a privilege and a pleasure to be here this afternoon, and I would like to bring you greetings from the Baha'is of Oklahoma City. This afternoon I'm going to speak on the subject, the challenge of the atomic age. The British historian Antoine Beard, in his History of Civilization, has said that unless mankind lives in peace and harmony on this planet, we may all die together in the greatest holocaust this planet has ever known. He speaks in his History of Civilization very much as Elmer Rice does in the article that Dr. Jensen just read to you. Can you all hear me now? Toynbee goes on to say that if men are to live together in peace and mutual harmony on this planet, they must eventually work out some techniques for resolving the basic differences of points of conflict that separate and keep men apart. And Toynbee, taking a long look back from his position as world historian, actually a long backward and forward look at all or most of the recorded civilization of mankind, concedes that the only solution to mankind's problems of living together is through a world religion which will bring together under one banner all of the diverse creeds and sects through which men have sought to know God. And he gives as the reason for the necessity of bringing men together through religion the fact that in perfecting atomic weapons, men on this planet have fashioned the very means of a destruction that could annihilate every living creature on the earth. In almost less than a generation, we have moved into the atomic age, and we are moving out of it into another, even more fabulous period, and more rapidly than we are able to realize or to grasp and cope with the challenges and the problems of the passing old era. The atomic age is passing, waiting before our very eyes, and mankind, for the most part, is letting it pass without bothering to rise up to the great challenges that it offers. Perhaps the greatest challenge of the atomic age is the acceptance of change in all the areas of our lives, in the social, cultural, and spiritual areas of our lives, as well as the physical, the mental, the political, and economic phases of our ongoing on this planet. All men were created to carry forward an ever-advancing civilization. Thus spake Baha'u'llah, the founder of the Baha'i Faith. And he went on to say that soon will the present order be rolled up and a new one spread out in its stead. These words uttered by Baha'u'llah attest to the fact that change is a part of the very life and the very nature of mankind. Nothing in the universe stands still. History is the study of this motion in human affairs. In the 80-odd years since Baha'u'llah wrote the words just quoted, the change in motion in human affairs has been as a whirlwind compared to the development in former periods. Changes in the affairs of humankind have been taking place since the first ancestors of men walked upright and began to make sounds that were different and to engage in actions that were different from those of the other animals. 10 to 15 centuries passed as society proceeded from the family to the clan status, from the clan to the tribe, from tribes to feudal states, from feudal states to nations. Each transition was marked by upheaval, but relative order followed relative chaos and disorder in various parts of the globe as civilizations progressed. And then, in just a mere 50 years, the miracle of the annihilation of space and time on this planet took place. From Roman times until about 1840 AD, travel remained at the same pace. In Queen Victoria's time, it still took 13 days to go from Rome to London, just as it had when Rome ruled England. By 1924, land travel was 6 times as fast, water travel 4 times as fast. Today, a jet flies from San Francisco to New York in a matter of 5.5 hours, and a flight around the world can be accomplished in less than 2 days, 45 hours and 19 minutes to be exact, by a record set by a B-52, January 25th, 1957. In the field of transportation, it took innumerable thousands of years for men to increase their speed of travel from 4 miles an hour to 40 miles an hour. Then, almost in the flicker of history's eye, we increased that speed from 40 miles an hour to 400 miles an hour, and upwards until we broke the sound barrier. And now we're traveling literally faster than sound. In the same period, communications have leaped from days and weeks for letters to reach their destination to a few minutes for a radiogram to go anywhere in the world. I've heard it said that with a shortwave transmission set, a person making a speech anywhere in the United States could be heard by people in Africa before he could be heard by people occupying the rear seats in the hall in which he is speaking. We cannot live under 20th century conditions guided by 18th century concepts. It's like living today in a 25,000 foot level ranch rambler type home and then bathing in an old-fashioned wash tub or going outside to an old-fashioned outdoor privy or outhouse. The comparisons are just that drastic between what we are trying to do in our so-called practical lives and how we are living in our spiritual lives.